Series 2 of the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross. And kicking off this series is the new Birmingham City Managing Director, Ian Dutton. And we're sitting here at St Andrews, Ian, overlooking the pitch in the glorious sunshine.
Yeah, we are. It's great to be here, Tom. Yeah, it's a beautiful day after today, actually. Lovely afternoon. So, looking forward to it.
And just looking at it, I mean, we'll come up in a little bit, we'll talk about it, but I'm just looking outside and already I can see signs that the stands work's taking place.
Yeah, so we provided an update for the supporters on Sunday just to showcase our next phase for the lower tier repairs with our site investigation work. So, as you'll see, seats have been removed in various blocks. We've got scaffolding being put up at the moment. So, signs are good. Signs are positive.
We'll come on to that shortly, though. So, but first, let's just talk a little bit about Ian Dutton. So where's Ian Dutton from?
So, originally from Tamworth. So, I was born and bred Tamworth. I lived in a place called Wilnecote. Wilnecote High School. Then I went to Sutton College, big Villa territory, actually.
Yeah,
I went to Sutton College after that.
Opposite
the police station, yeah, that's right. Then after that, I actually had a gap year from university. I was meant to be going to Sheffield Hallam University, but ended up going to work out in the south of France for a company called Acorn Adventure.
Wow.
And I was a windsurf instructor stroke village manager for, like, looking after school kids coming over from the UK to come and do adventure activities in the beautiful south of France.
Outward bound abroad.
Exactly that. Yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing, isn't it? I've known you a long time. You were a guest at my wedding, and I think I know you. And now all of a sudden, I'm finding out things I didn't know. So, just a little bit, you went to college, you did all that sort of stuff, you're from Tamworth. Was that always... Because Tamworth... I mean, I remember doing a Q&A at Wilnecote Sports and Social Club, I think.
Working Men's Club.
I remember doing one of them there at a blues one there. And a lot of blues fans that way.
Yeah, no, there are. So I was a regular in Two Guys Working Men's Club. And I was only brought up just around the corner in Dostal. So that's where I lived for the majority of my younger life. And... God, I remember being in various different functions. Actually, I played as a youngster for Dostal Colts.
Yeah, Dostal Colts.
For junior club. And I never forget, and he's a real good pal of mine now, but for 2 years on the trot, I wasn't great at football. I was the one that always got the clubman of the year. You know, he was the one that
the
polished
one the nobody boots. Wanted.
But I always remember Ian Clarkson was there on the road as the guy that was doing the presentations. Yeah. You know, I've still got photos of it now, but... I know the Two Gates Working Men's Club well.
And Tamworth, of course, supplied a few blues players, Tony Coton, Stevie Fox, rest his soul, no longer with us. Two great footballers for blues come from Tamworth. So, I mean, it's a long way to come to blues, though.
To the games.
Yeah, it is. I was a season ticket holder. It was before the Kop and the Tilton were actually built. So I actually had a season ticket in the Kop with my dad from roughly around about 92. I think I started to come to the games regularly. And then got a season ticket thereafter from around about 93, 94 season, just before Barry Fry era, fundamentally. And I used to, without fail, we used to have a routine. We got the train into Birmingham. We used to go to the sports bar on Broad Street, Payson Pool, all that kind of stuff, and then we'd walk our way to the old Brummie Tavern, the Bow Brummie Tavern, just by the sort of off the Garrison Road by the Garrison Green. Yeah, and in there I'd be playing more pool. I always remember they did a beautiful steak batch in there, a steak batch.
Steak sandwich.
Yeah, beautiful. And then we'd make our way up
with
to
onions,
the
of course.
With onions, absolutely. And mustard. Yeah. So I've got real fond memories of, you know, those days, you know, pre-me working at the Blues with my dad, my brother, and just everything that, you know.
There's nothing like going to them, and I should remember it still to this day, going with your dad.
Absolutely. It was amazing. Without fail, for years and years, we'd come to the games and, you know, we'd always used to go and buy some of the... unofficial magazines that were around, flying around, and we'd be sat there, you know, half an hour before the game, reading up on them, and it was good fun, really, really, really good memories.
So that early time, then you'd have been the Lumicari era, you'd have, the Leyland Daff then would have been
you're in.
Yeah, no, I was very lucky enough to go to the Leyland Athletic. Actually, that was 91, wasn't it? Was that 91? 92 season. So the year Johnny Gale scored the overhead kick. So yeah, I was at Wembley. Amazing, walking down Wembley Way. I suppose the one for me that stood out more, I was a little bit older, is the Water Windscreen Shield final, though.
Paul Tate's golden goal.
Paul Tate, yeah, and he lifted up his top to reveal some words underneath.
I've got to tell you, he's ever so funny about that, Tate. He said that he got summoned. He was told he was in trouble. And he got summoned by Karen Brady and David Sullivan to go into a meeting. Yep. And he thought he was getting the sack. But all David Sullivan was interested in is where the T-shirt came from and could they sell them?
Yeah, that sounds like Karen and David, 100%.
But that was your era, that early times there. So Simon Sturridge, John Gale, those were the players. Oh, John Franey and Clarkson.
John Franey and Clarkson, yeah, no, amazing players. I remember I had a double poster, the double signing of Barry Fry, of Ricky Otto and Kevin Francis. Yeah. Huge poster on the wall, you know, that year he signed, what, must have signed about, what, 40-odd players, something like that?
It was near a 50, but it's funny, you mentioned there, Ricky Otto. I've got Ricky Otto down to come to a changing room bar, because he's now a pastor, now a vicar in Lascelles.
Yeah, Lascelles Road, yeah. He's a pastor there. I don't think he's been to the Blues since my time.
But he wants to come. I've spoke to him, and he definitely wants to come.
Oh well, he's a you know, fans' favourite back in the day. Yeah. And at the end of the day, they're part of our history. We want as many legends back at this football club. Yeah. Talking in the changing rooms bar, which is just such a brilliant concept that we brought to the club with your support, Tom. We want to get as many of these faces back in the club.
Well, I think that's interesting there, because I've loved the changing room bar, but what I like best is the way the fans love it, because most clubs, not just Birmingham, most clubs look after the corporates, with all the players going into the corporates. And I get that, because it's revenue. It's a revenue-driven business. But here, the changing room bar is your normal every Tilton fans, and you go and see them, and they love it.
Yeah, 100%. So at the end of the day, you know, the fans...
You were one of them one time.
I still am. You know, I'd love nothing more than to... you know, once my hopefully I'll be here for a long, long time, but once I've left my legacy and I'll be back in the stands thereafter again, and to see your heroes back in the day, there's nothing better. No. You know, and I remember a few weeks ago we had Barry Fry in the changing room bar, and it was the day we played Peterborough, so he was literally there as a director coming into the changing room bar, telling the fans how much he just loves
singing Keep Right On as a director of Peterborough.
And then singing Keep Right On. I mean, you can't, that's priceless stuff.
You couldn't make it up.
He's such a character. I'm really good friends with him now, actually. Yeah. He'd do anything for the club, so yes. No, it's good.
So we'll talk about that then. You remember going to Blues, you remember your first game. How did you get the chance then to work at the club?
So the same company, actually, Acorn Adventure, that I spoke about earlier, they're actually based in Halesowen. So after my sort of days working for them overseas, I actually went to work for their head office on sales. Yeah. So I was actually selling the adventure holidays that I'd recently worked at to, you know, school groups up and down the country, scouts, that kind of stuff. So I got into that's how I got into my sales side of the business. And then, do you know what? I just saw an opportunity as an advertising sponsorship executive. It was being advertised, and I thought, do you know what? I want to go and work for my dream club. That's my passion. I want to go there. You know, that's where I want to be. Anyway, ended up applying. It was quite a funny story, actually, because I applied, got to the interview stage. Did really well. I've always done all right in interviews, I think. And then the second interview stage, they'd asked me to pull together a presentation to deliver, you know, what we can do. Anyway, I'll never forget. It was Adrian Wright, who you know, Tom. Yeah, previous commercial director. And Joanne Alsop, who was our HR director at the time that I was having the interview with. And they went to me, so, Ian, have you got your presentation ready and everything? I was like, presentation? They're like, oh yeah, no, we need to see a presentation. I was like, oh God, I'm so sorry. I thought you were presenting to me. I genuinely thought that actually there was a presentation on everything to do with Birmingham City, the role for me, not me to present to them. Anyway, I didn't actually get the job, believe it or not.
Did you not get
it then? No, I didn't get it. And it was actually about 2 weeks later that I got a phone call to say there's another opportunity that's come about. You really impressed us. Yeah. You know, you're a great personality. Will you come back to be re-interviewed for this role? And then the rest is history. That's how I got into that role. And that was in a that was as a hospitality sales executive.
Yeah. And that's where you started.
And that's where I started. Yeah, 15 years ago in September, started as a hospitality sales exec in a very thriving. Challenging sales departments. You've got to remember Karen was here then at that time.
Very demanding.
Yes, she wanted results as well as our commercial director at the time as well. So, you know, as you'd expect in a sales environment, you know, we had fun, but we also, you know, we had to work hard and that's how I got into it.
What was it like though then? Because after Karen and David took over Karen working with him. Golds didn't come for a little while afterwards. They didn't join him immediately. It was Karen and David. But it was an exciting time, you know, at that time, wasn't it? Because all of a sudden, owners with a few quid, they wanted to improve the ground, they wanted to get players in, they wanted to do this. It must have been an exciting time in that commercial sector.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, are you talking about with Karen and Sullivan and everyone there? Yeah, well, obviously, they'd already been here, like, 13 years since I started. Yeah. But you could tell that just, you know, their ambition was there for all to see. You know, they wanted to, I think at the time, actually.
So what year did you join then?
I was 2007, remember.
Good grief, oh, they had been here. Still an exciting time.
I was going to say they joined in 91, didn't they? 92,
As soon as the Kumars went,
I wasn't rattling the phone in the sales operation in 91, put it that way.
they didn't have a department then, I don't think. But okay, so it was an exciting time then for you. It was an opportunity, because knowing Karen and David, they never gave anybody anything. All they did was give you an opportunity and see what you did with that opportunity.
Yeah, so we were after a there was a football sales manager role at the time. I'd only been here probably 12 months, and they were recruiting for it, but they ideally wanted to recruit someone internally to give them the opportunity, which has always been a real good thing at this football club. And anyway, it was between me and a couple of other people, I think. I'll never forget, there was a young lad called Adam Brooks, still good friends with him now, such a top lad.
Yeah, good lad, I know Adam.
Yeah, really good lad. And he just knew, started at the time, and I think they were looking for someone to take him under their wing and show him the ropes and just really, you know, just really help progress him as an individual in the business. And I think from what I remember is I kind of took ownership of that, you know, and showed that actually, do you know what, leadership and
management
and, you know, that team
and people
spirit
management, which is important, isn't it? The people management side of managing is important.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. You know, and that was, I think that's where one of my strengths are, that I can, you know, I'd like to hope that anyone that's ever worked for me within the commercial world, you know, there's a two-way respect there, you know, and, you know, they've always been treated fair. And, you know, I'm very much of the opinion that I wouldn't ask a member of my staff to do something without doing it myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that's my kind of mentality. But anyway, Adam Brooks showed him the ropes. He grew. And anyway, they basically identified that and thought, do you know what, this guy's ready for a sales manager role. And that's how I got into my next step into management, which was great.
And then eventually you ended up as head of commercial again.
Yeah, that was an opportunity. Unfortunately, that was the season that we got relegated from the Premier League, same the year that we won the Carling Cup, which was a very up and down year. But our commercial director at the time, unfortunately, left. Another great guy, a guy called Kevin Smith, but he left. And I was given the mantle, the opportunity to showcase what I could do on a probation period. And then the rest is history.
When you took over, little did you know what the next 10 or 11 years were going to bring, I suppose.
No, it was a very challenging time. Obviously, we got relegated that same sort of summer. Unfortunately, we had some ownership issues. So obviously that, you know, that unfortunately didn't leave a great taste with certain sponsors. Yeah, yeah. Certainly if you were a financial company like F&C Investments, yeah, for example.
Who were quite big, they were on the front of the shirts, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah, they were. And they were meant to continue on the front of the shirts, but it didn't happen for various different reasons. So one of my sort of main objectives thereafter was to go and find a brand new front of shirt sponsor, yeah, for a football club that had been relegated with certain ownership issues that were obviously out of my control.
And, easy job.
Yeah, easy job, yeah. But do you know what? We did it, and we got a fantastic company. I don't know if you remember a company called Rational Effects.
Yeah, Rational, yeah.
Yeah, I remember going to their offices in London.
They were good people, actually. They were currency people from memory.
Yeah, they're a foreign exchange company.
Yeah, that's right.
And Rajesh Agrawal.
Good guy.
Yeah, really good guy. He's actually the deputy mayor of London now.
Is he really?
Yeah, no, he is, yeah. So he's... he's really developed himself as an individual. Great guy, great company. But yeah, we had some challenges. But if you remember, the same year we were in Europe.
Europe, yeah. Great times.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What an experience.
I mean, you were there, presumably, everyone. Of course, I was on the plane with you, most of them. But they were a club that had gone relegated, ownership issues, and there they were in Europe competing with the best. And getting results that no other team had, like a Bruges, and no English team had got a result. 10 points, which any other year gets you through, and typical Blues, we didn't.
No, absolutely. I mean, you go back to my, when I used to go to games with my dad and my brother, my fondest, I was fortunate to go to all the games, very fortunate. But the one game that just sticks out more than anyone is that away day at Bruges.
Amazing.
And I didn't go there, I made it clear that I weren't going to go there in a working capacity.
Oh, you wanted to go as a fan?
I went there as a fan. I went with my brother and my dad. I'll never forget being in... We went for two or three nights, actually, and I'll never forget being in Bruges Square before the game.
How good was that?
Unbelievable. Just, honestly, it puts hairs on the back of my neck now, actually, even thinking about it.
I was in there, that square, and bumping into so many people and seeing the flags everywhere. But the thing that sticks in my mind, that you probably remember it, is that I looked up at that big cathedral, because it's massive, isn't it? And there's a
Blues
flag sticking at the time. Did you ever think, how's that get there?
Yeah, it was me, Tom.
But the next time I saw that cathedral was on the film. If you remember the film Bruges.
Yeah.
To be fair, Belgium, they love a chocolate shop, don't they, and a church.
Yeah, they certainly do. But yeah, just amazing. I mean, even like...
Remember, the club had bad publicity going into that. In all their newspapers, it talked about the Zulus, it talked about this, it talked about that, and everybody was worried and all the people worried. It couldn't have been a more friendly atmosphere if you'd have tried.
Unbelievable atmosphere. I mean, we had 6,000, from memory, we had 6,000 seats sold in the away fan, in the away end. This is in Belgium. And then I think there was reported a further 2,000-3,000 that actually travelled over just to be as part of the experience. And I don't think there was a spot of trouble out there.
None. There was none. And I think they were so surprised. But that shows you what can happen when media get hold of wrong stories, doesn't it? But it was a brilliant day, brilliant game, brilliant trip, everything about it. But that square, the good naturedness, kicking the ball around the lads, everybody just... And the police joining in and having a good time with the fans.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
So that was then, and you know, things were, I suppose, set to go to get tougher. And let's be fair, a commercial department at this time, it must be tough. It must have been tough, you know, to keep reaching your targets, bettering your targets, and bringing in money, much needed money, at a time when the club wasn't doing that well. That adds pressure, surely.
Yeah, it does. It obviously makes, you know, at the end of the day, we're a football team, you know, and we need to win games. You know, you win games, the better you'll do, the more seats you'll sell, you know, the more corporate sponsorship you'll sell as well. But obviously we can't control that, unless I'm going to put my boots on and play it up front.
After what you told us earlier,
definitely, yeah. I'd definitely win Clubman of the Year again. But it does make life hard. But the one thing that we did is we kind of like adapted our whole commercial sort of model in the fact that, okay, well, we can't rely on the football on the pitch, but what we can do is we can use the business and the power and the credibility of Birmingham City Football Club as an organisation to really leverage businesses and really showcase, well, actually, if you really want to network and if you want to, you know, help bring a return in your business or help from a marketing sponsorship perspective, you know, and really showcase your business in good light. You want to get involved in Birmingham City Football Club because the commercial team will make sure that you're introduced to X, Y, and Z person that are going to add value to your business. And that's what we did. The whole of the commercial operation over the past sort of 8 or 9 years has been built on relationships. It's been built on making sure that people are networking with like-minded individuals, and they're able to do business together. And that in itself has helped us in good stead. I mean, one example is a company called Snatchpack. Dave Taylor and Dave Ashburn, you know, they've been outstanding corporate partners for us over the years. On the shorts, you know, they've done lots of our women's team. They've had one of our main premium boxes for many years, you know, and a lot of that was through the networking side. And I think there was one introduction that we made to them, which was Nicolites, which was our previous e-cigarette company, and they ended up doing a bit of their packaging for them for, like, you know, a real big sort of electronic cigarette brand. They're going to need a lot of packaging,
and that's successful networking, isn't it?
Yeah, successful networking, and that adds value to their business. So they're more inclined to, they want a bit more, you know, and like a lot of businesses around here, they want to get involved because they know that they're going to get value from it. And that's what we've done. We just tried to be, you know, I've always said it, you know, although we're not Premier League on the pitch, we want to be Premier League off the pitch. And that's how, from a commercial perspective, that's how we've always put it forward. We always want to make sure that whatever we do is best in class.
And I think we've noticed the Birmingham City Former Players Association, the relationship with you, because you wanted to involve us at the club. You made us an inclusive part of the club.
100%. I mean, how long have I been involved in the Former Players Association directly now? For what, best part of four or five years? 4 or 5 years, yeah. That's probably about right. And, you know, like I said earlier, our former players and our history and our heritage, it's part of the club. It's in the makeup of us. It's our culture.
It is the club.
It is the club, exactly that, you know. And it's, you know, so... And the players, the legacy, they should all be part of it, and they should feel part of the success and the success.
Feel welcomed
as well. Feel welcomed, you know. So so hence the reason why, yes, I have been, certainly for the past 4 or 5 years. That's only going to improve even more now. More active about bringing our legends back to the club, that little bit more, and building those relationships.
What were the I mean, if there is such a thing as hurdles, what were the hurdles? Because, you know, you were trying to be successful, and you were successful at a tough time when, you know, there were various, and I'm not just talking about, but the previous owners, which you mentioned had issues. Then we had new owners, and all of a sudden we got different chief exec. We had one before who wasn't very popular, Peter Panu. Then Dong wasn't very popular. Panos Pavlakis sort of was and wasn't, you know. How difficult does that make it all? Because you rely on them to help you be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in fairness to Panos, you know, I got on really well with Panos. You know, and he did help from a relationship and a networking perspective. He had a lot of added a lot of support for me. That was obviously pre our sort of current ownership. Now, but you've got to remember at the time, obviously, because of everything that was going on, we were with the administrators, Ernst & Young at the time, so it was a very difficult and
tough time.
You know, and I suppose when you were talking to potential sponsors and partners for the football club, it made it very challenging because
that's where I was getting to,
really have you know, there wasn't that reassurance there, you know, so yeah, it was tough, but. Do you know what? We were ready for the challenge, and we still managed to produce the results, which is the main thing. So,
was there a time though where you thought, "Sod this, I'm getting out of it. I'm going to find somewhere else." Did you ever get to that stage?
No.
Never?
No. I think the biggest single reason was the people. We've got some great people at this football club, and I'd like to talk about them today, actually. But even previously, we've always had a really, really good. Just some good, passionate people that work at the football club who cared, absolutely. You know, and that always, for me, that's always a really, really big thing. And that's not just the staff that work within the football club. That's a lot of the corporate clients that are involved and the supporters as well. Do you know what I mean? I always want to make a difference at this football club, and you know, I always strive to help to make a difference, and I always want to try and improve things, you know, and there's no difference now than it was back then 5 or 6 years ago. Improve things that I was able to control
under your control.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Have I gone through challenging times when I thought, okay, do you know what? This isn't easy.
I've been there. This can affect your home life. I mean, it can do that. So, and I know that there was other clubs interested. You could have moved. I know that because they spoke to me. So I know you could have moved, but you didn't. You know, there must have been, you know, hell of a pull here to keep you.
Yeah, well, it's just it's the love for the football club. I have been approached by other sports organisations, not just in football, lots of them for many years. But I've just always been drawn back to Birmingham City Football Club because it's my club. Could I instill the same passion and pride and everything at another football club? Possibly, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, whoever I work for, I'm always going to give it 110%. But there's always going to be that little bit extra here at the football club because, you know, I'm blue through and through. Mm-hmm.
So, head of commercial, you were advertising, you were all sorts of things. Now, the managing director, how did that come about, you being appointed MD?
Obviously, our previous CEO left, when was it now, last March, yeah. April time. I mean, I've made it known for a number of years, I want to be CEO, managing director,
whatever.
The top job at Birmingham City Football Club. I'm a very ambitious guy. You know, I
just one thing there, because that's everybody would have that ambition. But it's a risk because you've got this pull for this club, you love this club, you want to be involved, but you were prepared to take that on, right? You were prepared to take that on knowing that if it didn't go right, you might not be at the, you know what I mean? That was another decision you had to make in your personal life as well, I would think, to take that job.
Yeah, of course it was. You know, at the end of the day, I've got to make sure I've got a family, you know, and I have got, you know, I've got a young 11-year-old daughter, got a beautiful fiancée, you know, Sophia. Yeah. You know, and I've got to make sure that, you know, any decision I make, how does it affect them? You
impact
know?
On them.
Exactly that, you know. But, you know, they're both so supportive. And to be fair to the club, you know, the club are fully aware that my daughter, she's
the most important thing
she's
in your
the
life.
Most
I know that
thing. Yeah, Birmingham City comes certainly after my daughter. And they're really understanding of that, like they are with all the staff, you know, in terms of if you've got families, they know that they come first, you know, so...
That's interesting, Ian, because, you know, the club get a lot of a stick, don't they, from around. It's nice to know that they care about the staff and the staff's families.
Oh, 100%. You know, well certainly from my perspective anyway, I've always, if I've needed to go and pick up my daughter, you know, or if she's got a school play or whatever it might be... They've always been like, of course, Ian, your daughter comes first, and that's never been any different, if I'm honest. Wow. Even through, you know, which I'm really grateful for because I need to have that sort of work-life balance and that the ability to do that. You know, there has to be a level of trust, but they trust me and they know they can trust me, and that's
how important is that word trust between you and your bosses?
Yeah, really important.
Mutual trust, I mean.
Yeah, mutual trust, absolutely, really important. I think, you know, in any business, you know, you need to be able to trust people, don't you? Well, in life, you know, you want to be able to trust people so you can move forward. So yeah, no, it's really important.
But to be fair, you're the MD, but you're only the MD, not because you're a nice guy, but because they believe you can make a difference and it wasn't right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said before, you know, when our old CEO left, I saw that as an opportunity. So I kind of stepped up in my own way. I got myself involved in a lot more stuff around the football club to make it physically, visibly known that, you know what, I want this role and I want to...
And I can do it.
And I can do it and I want to take it forward. You know, and then, lo and behold, a couple of months ago, obviously we were going through some difficult times. The supporters, you know, weren't happy and rightfully so, you know, and they demonstrated that through protest. And, you know, and there was... I was given the opportunity by the board to take on this role as managing director. And I was honoured, proud, privileged. And I've said that many, many times. I've wanted this for a long time because I know I can make a difference. You know, given the right support.
Which is key.
And all these questions have been asked by me. I wouldn't just take the role if I didn't think that I was going to get the backing and the support to make the change.
To be fair, you'd be a mug if you took it without that assurance.
Exactly. You know, you know, obviously I had to speak to, like I said before, speak to my family, but there was no hesitation I wanted to take it and run with it and you know, really try and make a difference and leave a legacy for this football club.
Now, how difficult, because I'm going to be absolutely blunt here, you were working for a CEO that wasn't very popular with the supporters.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the internet, but he wasn't very popular with the supporters. He didn't go out of his way to make himself popular with the supporters. So all of a sudden, you had to be working under those... You were still working there and you know, working under him and doing the best you can commercially, which was very successful. That must have been challenging. And now all of a sudden, you get the chance to repair that relationship, because you've talked about relationships. The biggest relationship at a football club is between the club and its supporters.
Yeah, 100%. Excuse me. I mean, you know, I'm not going to speak of the past now. The past is the past.
Can't do anything about it now.
Yeah, but one thing that I can do is look to the future. Mm. You know, and I know that, you know, we've already talked about it quite often, that communication is key. You know, it's the key within any business, within life. You know, you talk to people, you let them know what's going on, you be open, transparent. And the one thing you are always going to get with me is I'll act with the utmost integrity. Yeah. Integrity is so important. You know, and... and yeah, one of the things that we just hadn't, you know, we hadn't been at the forefront with is that communication to supporters, and not just supporters, our staff internally. You know, the staff internally, the communication levels weren't where they should have been, with the local authorities, with the local community. You know, it was it all needed tightening up and putting there at the utmost importance. And the board realise that now. You know, everyone internally realises that, and it's still not perfect. It's going to take time, just like a lot of things are. But we're certainly going in the right direction, that's for sure.
Because a football club is, it's a business, because let's get clear, it's a business, and you run that business side. But it's more than a business. It's an integral part of a community. It's an integral part of a city. You know where I'm coming from? It's not just a business, is it? So when you talk about that communication, that is vital in this sort of business, at any football club.
Yeah, 100%. We're not just a business. We're a part of this community and have been for the past 147 years or whatever it is now. And the community is vital to us. I'm slowly starting to build relationships now with leader of Birmingham Council, Ian Ward. He's with me on Sunday for our game against West Brom, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah. You know, building relationships with the like of Deborah Cadman, the CEO of the West Midlands Combined Authority, obviously Andy Street, all the big leaders within the city to help put Birmingham City Football Club back on the map within the community. Really important. At the end of the day, you've got to remember, and I've said it before, we are Birmingham City. We're Birmingham City. We adopt the second city name. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so important, and we need to leverage that. It's massive. You know, there's so much going on within our city. We've got the Commonwealth Games here, obviously coming up in the summer, which everyone's really excited about. Obviously, the likes of HS2, some of the big major sort of banking corporations are moving their headquarters here. Well, HSBC already have, Goldman Sachs, etc., etc. It's a very proud time to be a Brummie and to be an organisation within Birmingham. You know, so 100%, we need to be at the forefront of that community stuff,
and not just in Birmingham, not just in Britain, but worldwide as well. If you carry a name like Birmingham, which is known throughout the world, city of 1,000 trades, the rest of it, that's important as well in terms of, if you like, promoting the club's profile worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, long term ambition. You know, obviously we want to get to the Premier League as soon as we can. We know that's going to take, you know, potentially a bit of time, but, you know, we want to make sure that we're on the trajectory to make sure that we are a global brand. We want to be a global brand, you know, within the Premier League. That's our ambition. More short term, we need to get this right here. You know, the community is such a big part of the city, and make sure that we're on the map here. They know that we're an integral part of everything moving forward, and then we can look at those sort of more global ambitions thereafter as well.
You run the business side. Craig Gardner runs the football side. It's again a very, very important relationship, that.
Yeah, no, I get on really well with Craig. We have done for a long time. I've known Craig since he was a player here. Yeah. First time round, obviously Carling Cup days. Always had a really good sort of relationship with him. He's a top guy, just salt of the earth. very down to earth. And over time, obviously that relationship has developed into a really good working relationship as well, from a business perspective.
How does it work? How does it work?
Well, I mean, obviously, as I say, I mean, Craig's football on business, but the two go side by side. So we meet regularly, you know. Well, once a week we'll meet as a senior management team and as a board anyway, discuss sort of top line matters at the football club. But then every single day me and him are talking all the time just about what things are going on from a business perspective that are going to impact potentially what's going on from a footballing perspective. You know, we'll collaborate with each other as well. So if I see opportunities where I think, actually, do you know what, that's going to help and support the footballing side, you know, and vice versa, that's what we'll do. But no, I mean Craig's a shrewd cookie. He's a good businessman as well. You know, he's
he's not some thick footballer, Craig, is he? I mean, he's got a real, and we've seen already with the way he's grabbed hold of that job.
Yeah, 100%. He's got a real ambition, and he knows what he wants to achieve and how he's going to get there. And I've got a lot of time for that. You know, me and him, you know, at the end of the day, we've only worked directly as managing director and technical director in those positions now for the past 6 or 7 weeks. So we're still working ahead to make things better. But it's a really good relationship, and I'm sure that'll only continue to grow as things develop.
Presumably, though, you both report to BSHL.
Yep.
Tell us how that works. How does that work? Do they leave you to get on with it? Do you report in daily, regularly, weekly, monthly? How does it work?
Well, the board here at the football club consists of Edward, Shane, and our chairman, Mr. Zhao. So we'll report to them daily, as and when we need to. They're very active. They're very involved. They will always they'll always listen to us. You know, take our advice on board, support us, help us. As I say, we have weekly board meetings anyway, which they're involved with. We've got a direct relationship from that perspective.
The chairman is he's also chairman of the BSHL, so he is the most important man in terms of the relationship with the ultimate owners, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's the sort of day-to-day chairman of the football club that will make those ultimate decisions. But like I say, I mean, we, as I mentioned before, you know, if I didn't have the backing to make change at the football club, then, you know, I wouldn't have looked to take this role, you know. And they're so supportive, you know, everything that I've asked for, as long as I've put a genuine business case together, you know, and that's important because, you know, I'm mindful if I don't put good quality business cases together, then...
So when you need to do something here, you presumably you'll have a profit and loss account, all the rest of it, and you'll put a plan to the board and to get their approval. But rather than just ask for it, you do a plan.
Yeah, everything. And that's the way it should be in business, that we'll always put, okay, well, I want to spend X amount of money, or I want to put, you know, do this particular initiative. You know, a lot of the time I'll be able to make those decisions off my own back, but if it is something significant, then rightfully so, we should present that to the board.
Which any business would.
Yeah, we present that to the board, and, you know, as long as it makes absolute sense, then we'll run with it, but we'll just make sure it always makes absolute sense. So,
I mean, there are a lot of things here to put right here, and you know that. You're a fan, so you know from the fan's perspective, you've worked at the... You know exactly what needs to be done. But did you ever have that, when you took the job, where do I start sort of moment?
Yeah. Obviously, as I alluded to, it was a relatively tough time a couple of months ago when I kind of took over this role. So we kind of just had to look at, okay, well, what were the main touch points? What were the things that we really needed to address and change? I keep calling it the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
You know, what can we grab to make those changes pretty quickly? Obviously, that communication piece was so important. You know, we just weren't communicating effectively. And not just communicating, listening as well. You know, I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's... And that's why I'm so... That's why I like to be active on Twitter. And I'm happy to be active on Twitter because I want...
You use the word active. I think for me, having watched you, it means you're approachable on Twitter.
Yeah, I am approachable. You know, and if I can't answer something, then I won't answer it, you know. But 9 times out of 10, if someone's coming to me with something, I'll always look to try and, you know, to try and address that. And, you know, a lot of these things I go in action myself. I've got an amazing support team that will support me and make things happen. And what's important to one fan might not be important to the other, and vice versa. So everyone's everyone's words and what they're after and what they ask me on Twitter is really important to me, because I know that actually these little things all add up to important stuff, you know. And
if you kill off the little things one by one, they never become massive.
Exactly, absolutely. And do you know what's really helped? Because a lot of the stuff I wasn't even aware of. You know, like little things like, you know, I think someone mentioned about in the main stands, in the paddocks, there was no numbers on the back of seats or letters, you know, to show which indicate which row you're on. So I'm thinking, well, actually, I mean, I wasn't aware of that, number one. But as a fan, if you were like a first-time fan at the football club...
Where'd you sit?
You've got a ticket that says row F, seat 55. Well, where is it? You know, and actually that can turn into quite an embarrassing moment, yeah. You know. So, you know, you've always got to put your fan... You know, I keep saying it, fans-first approach. So whatever decision we make at the football club, how does it impact the fans, you know, and think of it from that mentality.
You mentioned the stadium. Let's just talk about the lower tiers, because I know you've got the upper tiers open. Let's talk about the lower tiers. How stressful has it been, that? Because I was at the meeting with the supporters, mm-hmm. and I saw the videos and the photographs, and horrendous. So, but how stressful has that been? Because at first, and I'm being truthful with you now, I sat at home and I'd go, for God's sake, get the builders in, sort it out. When Dong was looking after, get the builders in. It's not quite that simple, is it?
No, it's not. It's been really stressful. Really stressful. It's been, you know, for certain key stakeholders, including myself within the business, it's been probably the most stressful thing at the football club in recent weeks. Nothing happens quick. It does from our side. You know, we're reactive. We're not reactive. We're proactive. You know, but to try and get answers and try and get things moving quickly is a challenge. And then something else pops up. So, you know, you might be looking at one thing one day, but then something else will pop up that will impact X, Y, and Z on your projects. It's not easy, you know. And if I, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to remember, I'm a Blues fan. Yeah. You know, for me, I want to get this place open.
But also, as the commercial head of commerce, well, you're the MD now, but as head of commerce at the time, you wanted it open for revenue.
But exactly. You know, no, at the end of the day, we want it open. We want fans there in the lower tiers cheering the team on, because we know that's only going to help them on the pitch.
Fix it, yeah.
But also, we want to sell seats. You know, and I don't want other away clubs to come to St Andrews and see the lower tiers empty. You know, it kills me seeing that, let alone our supporters. You know, we want St Andrews to be a fortress again. You know, and to be, that's where I want to get it to. And, you know, but we need to open up them lower tiers as quickly as possible, fully aware of that. But we've still got to do it right and proper, you know, and for the long term as well. And also, do you know what? On the other side, you know, we can't, you know, we've got to, from a financial perspective, we have also got to make sure that what we're paying is fair and reasonable as well. Yeah. You know, because we're dictated by time, right. That potentially could mean that contractors may take advantage of us.
We can't want it done quick, I'm charging you this.
We can't allow that to happen. It's got to be a fair and reasonable price, but also on the basis of the fact that we know that we've got to get it open as quickly as possible because of X, Y, and Z, what I've just mentioned.
Are things going okay now? I mean, I can see out, we've already mentioned it earlier about looking at the scaffolding going up and the seats being taken out. Are you on track?
Yeah. So we've taken a real big step. So we've got the site investigation happening now, which is going to, you know, determine and give us some other clear outcomes. We've already alluded to in our club update, the reason why this site investigation is taking place is because we need to test the ground. And when I say the ground, I mean the actual ground underneath the stands. That needs to be tested.
The foundations,
absolutely. There's a couple of options that we're looking at that we'll need to... the bearing capacity on the ground will need to be tested, hence the reason why we're doing this. You know, so it's not easy. You know, we've already alluded to the fact that, you know, and I'm happy to show you, Tom, you know, more than happy, but if you go under those terraces and physically see what's under there and the space constraints underneath there, honestly, you'll be amazed. We've literally got the whole of the old ground under there.
Which, you know, is crackers, isn't it, really?
This is tons and tons and tons of concrete blocking access to where we need to see. You know, so...
So is that catch-22? You can't get your safety certificate because of that, and you can't remove that because of the space constraints. So now you're talking about removing seats, digging underneath, all sorts of things going on at the moment. How, you know, Do you expect any more issues? I mean, you don't know, I suppose, another problem cropping up, or do you think you get into the grip of getting a grip of it?
I think we are, and I think this is the reason why it's taken a bit more time than I think fans would like, is the fact that we've had to be thorough.
Yeah,
we've got to be thorough, because the last thing that I want is we want to rush things, and then for 2 months down the line, something major to pop up, and you know,
all the
hard work we've just done has got to, yeah. You know, it's got to be done again. It's got to be done properly. You know, we've got to make sure that, you know, do it once, do it right, do it properly. Mm. I've always had that kind of motto, yeah. and that's what we're doing. We're being thorough. You know, and if that does mean a little bit longer, do you know what? Then so be it. But we've got to do it properly, you know, and make sure that, you know, when we do get into the main works, that we're not going to hit these stumbling blocks along the way. I'm not saying that we won't, but I think hopefully by being thorough, it will prevent those things from happening.
But already, I know you've mentioned before, and it's difficult because of the nature of the work and the engineering and all the problems, you can't give a time, I get that. But do you have hopes that next season we'll be seeing the seats in use at some time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hope not to... I'm still hopeful for nearer the start of the season. That's what I'm hopeful
but
for.
But obviously tomorrow might bring another problem.
Yeah, it's best case scenario, I'll be honest. But that's what we're hopeful for. You know, when I say start of the season, you know, it might roll into September, October. We're aiming to get them open as quickly as possible, you know. We have to. You know, for the reasons that we've already said.
I came to the football club early, like I normally do on match days, and I saw you walking around the ground taking photographs. You were there early, walking around the whole ground taking photographs. And when I spoke to you, you said, I just want to check what needs to be done. I mean, that's a real hands-on approach for me.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I am very hands-on. I've always been that way inclined. You know, it doesn't take much for me to wander. I like to wander around the stadium. I like to have that eyes open approach to certain things because certain things might get missed. So I'm constantly taking photos of stuff, if I'm honest. Constantly sending myself emails, you know, just to make sure that things are noticed and identified, and but they can be put right, you know, no matter how big or small that they might be. But I do want to lead by example. You know, I want to lead from the front. And help support the team to make St Andrews a better place.
It has looked, over the last few years, it's looked tired, if I'm honest, at times. But already we've seen with what you've done at the front, with the pictures, what we've seen at various other parts, you do understand that. And I think you're trying to put it right. You've taken care of some of the catering issues that the fans had problems with. It is going to take time, though, isn't it?
It is going to take time, you know, and not just me either, Tom. You know, I think... The board, you know, at the end of the day, and I said it before, the board themselves, Edward, Mr. Zhao, Shane, they all recognise, actually, do you know what? We haven't done things as well as we should have done at St Andrews. There are things that need to change, you know.
And, which is why you're here.
And they recognise that, absolutely, you know, and they want to push things forward. They want to make the fans proud, you know. And it's the same with the staff here at the football club. You know, the staff that are on the ground. A lot of them have had shackles on for a long time, you know. You know, and they've been released now, do you know what I mean? And they're really excited about it. They're really excited about putting things forward. These things that have happened over recent weeks, they haven't just been happened by me. They've happened because we've got a really good team here at the football club. Too many names to mention, if I'm perfectly honest. And that will only continue to...
Are you saying then that the team's been re-energised?
Yeah, to a degree, absolutely. Like I say, I think, you know, under previous leadership, they haven't had the opportunity to really make a difference.
Express themselves.
Express themselves, absolutely. Whereas I think in the last couple of months, few months, they have, you know. And at the end of the day, you're nothing without your team. You're nothing.
You know, you're as good as the people who work for you.
You're as good as the people that work for you. So, you know, allowing them to express themselves, allowing them to have an opinion, you know, I think that's really important. You know, allowing them to come up with ideas and be creative and, you know, just make sure that they're, you know, they're looking at things from a different angle. You know, they're thinking outside the box. They're thinking how they, you know, as a fan, you know, how would they look at things, you know, from a fan's perspective. You know, me and the team, God, we... you know, it's probably overkill meetings, but we meet so often and we're like, you know, I've always been that creative mind where we're talking about different things and different ideas and, you know, matter how wacky they might be. But it's refreshing. It's very refreshing. And you can see things are happening. You know, I'd like to hope, you know, because I am speaking on behalf of the staff here, that they're seeing a real positivity within the everyday work.
Knowing you again, I think you've taken the job, you're in the role, you're getting on with it. Where do you hope? What are your hopes and ambitions as MD at Birmingham?
I think it comes in sort of three different parts, really. You know, for me, initially, I think, you know, that whole sort of match day experience needs to be enhanced. You know, that was a really...
Supporter-driven, that, isn't it?
Supporter-driven, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's... you know, I, you know, from that perspective, for me, and I'm going to use Wolves as an example, because actually they do it well. And I know, obviously, they've been in Premier League a few years now and they've got Premier League finances, etc. But it's not just a football match at Wolves. It's a show. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's a show. Everything about it, you know, the... You know, and it's and I want that here at St Andrews. You know, I want it to be a proper day out, but not just, you know, for every different demographic. You know, the grassroots elements of the football club is a really important part for me. I want to make sure that we're growing our fan base. You know, that we are, as we talked about earlier, engaging with the community, and that's not just with leaders of the community. That's with school groups, you know, grassroots football teams.
Building the next generation.
Yeah. You know, we talked about, me and you have talked about East Birmingham, you know, where you're, you know, where you were brought up. You know, that we perhaps don't engage with East Birmingham enough. You know, I think a lot of people think that Selly Hall and South Birmingham is Birmingham hardcore. And it is, don't get me wrong. But East, there's nothing compared to East Birmingham. That's where you're hardcore.
And Tamworth and places like that, to be fair, you mentioned it. You know.
Yeah, there are a lot of Villa fans in Tamworth, but there are also a lot of Blue Noses as well. And we want to grow the fan base, you know. And sorry, I was getting to the point of the fact that, you know, I want match day to be a real experience, you know. You know, so they're excited to come back and they're excited to get here early. Mm. And the earlier they get, you know, from a commercial perspective... You know, the more money they're putting into, you know, the bars and the kiosks and, you know, and just having a really...
You've got to give them a reason to get here, really.
You've got to give them a reason to get here, you know. And that's going to take time, you know. We're introducing little things here now. I mean, in the future, a big fan park. I'd love nothing more than to have a fan park, you know, that we can utilise not just on a match day, but also on a non-match day, you know, where we can do big events and live events, etc. So there is a big vision from that perspective. You know, and just to get the, you know, I mean, long term, I don't want to get carried away, is I'd love to really support the board and the club to redevelop the stadium in some way, shape or form. Obviously, the main stand, you know, I'd love to be part of the growth of that moving forward, but, you know...
As part of a legacy,
but, you know, I think we need to be realistic. We are where we are now. There's, you know, it's going to take time, but I think over time, we will make those changes, those positive changes.
But of course, all things, whatever you do, a lot of it revolves around what happens out there on that bit of green we're looking at, doesn't it? A lot of it revolves around there, which is not your domain, but you're working, and however successful you are helps to contribute towards Craig getting in the sort of quality that the club needs. So it really is everybody, all hands, but it's results driven, isn't it? And you know that as well.
Yeah, no, of course, absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, we're a football club, you know, and the... You know, me, I'll speak on behalf of every other fan, you know.
I know how upset you get when they lose.
No, exactly, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll speak on behalf of a fan that, you know, I just want to see a Birmingham City Football Club team just give it 110% on that football pitch, you know. And, you know, win, lose or draw, if they give that, you know, you're kind of, you're happy, aren't you? And normally when you give 110% anyway, you normally get the results you want anyway. So it comes hand in hand, doesn't it?
But like your job and your staff's job, you're talking about something, whether you're a footballer, you're a journalist, or you're a MD or your staff. Hard work's the platform.
It is, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, and Craig and Lee and everyone at the training ground, you know, I think we've got a really good, really, we're on a real positive stepping stone now. I know Craig keeps calling it a transition, and it is. And
he's talked about a 3-year plan. It'll actually be two when you consider it's seasons he's talking about. So I get where he is, but you can't just switch it off, can you, and switch it on. It does take time to change. With all due respect to you and everybody else, it's going to take time to sort out 10 years of what's gone on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's and that's what me, Craig, the board, the rest of the staff, and the rest of the team need to do now. It's about, okay, well, what's happened in the past has happened in the past. Okay, how can we put that right moving forward? We know it's going to take time. We know we're going to need some, you know, financial support as well as other support from other areas. How do we get there? What do we do? And how do we, in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time, look back and go, do you know what? Bloody hell, we've made a real good change here. Yeah. You know, we've really, you know, we're really proud of what we've achieved. Yeah. You know, and you can see St Andrews as a fortress again.
You know, to be fair, you'll have had 10 years of knowing what not to do, won't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be fair, with all due respect, yeah, you'll have had 10 years of, we know what mistakes can be made, we're not going to make them mistakes.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and I'm more, you know, actually, you know, I've always, my dad always used to say, actually, that, you know what, you learn from good managers, but you learn more from bad managers, yeah, you know, not what to do. So it's, yeah, absolutely. So we can definitely take that on board.
How long do you want to be here?
How long do I want to be here? Another 15 years, Tom, yeah, of course. Look, I want to be in this position for as long as it takes to make the right changes, you know, at the football club, the proper real good changes. You know, I'd love to be the managing director of Birmingham City Football Club in the Premier League. That's where I would love to be, nothing more. And competing in the
Premier
League.
That's your legacy, isn't it?
In competing in the Premier League, you know, in a...
Hang on, just get that clear. So you've said competing in the Premier League. So you don't want to visit the Premier League, which a lot of teams do, go up and come down. You don't want to visit it. You want to establish Birmingham City as a Premier League club. We're not talking about winning things, but establish them as a bona fide Premier League club.
100%. If I didn't have ambitions like that, then, you know, I don't think it'd be right. And I'm not naive enough to think that it's going to happen overnight.
Of course not.
Because it's not. But... yeah, absolutely.
Everybody has to have aims, don't they?
I would absolutely love nothing more than to be, you know, helping lead this football club in the Premier League. That is an ambition for me, 100%.
Long term, though it may be, it's in your mind, and you need that. I think we all need that, don't we? Something that inspires us and drives us on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see clubs all the time, you know, clubs that have never been in the Premier League. You know, look at Luton, for example. Yeah. How brilliant are Luton doing? You know, and actually a lot of that is around good leadership. You know, they haven't got huge finances. It's about good leadership, a real positive mentality, an injection into the whole football club, creating a culture. And actually, do you know what? It can be done. And I think that's what me, Craig, the board, everyone here involved at the football club, we're on the right path. We know there's a lot to change. We know we've got a lot to do. But I'm sure all of us combined as a collective, we can achieve our goals and what we want to get out of it moving forward.
With the fans.
Oh, we can't do it without the fans. Yeah. The fans are Birmingham City Football Club. That's a fact. You know, but as long as if we can do what we need to do, and we're always putting the fans first, like I've said before, we're involving the fans as well. I think that's really important, you know, and we want to involve the fans more and more and more. You know, especially with obviously the fan-led review, you know, we know that that is a possibility that will come into governance, you know, which again, you know, is a good positive. We want to embrace it. We want to embrace fans, get them involved, and help make the. We just want to grow the football club together as a collective, as one.
Well, good luck with it. It's been brilliant talking to you. Thanks very much indeed. And what do you think, folks? Brilliant, eh? Well, all I want you to do is to leave a review if you would. It's the Games Gone podcast. It's series 2. It's the first one. Like it, don't like it, whatever. Just leave a review. Until the next time, thanks for talking to us. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you ever so much. Keep right on.